So today I'm going to be looking at where Jesus said, I am the light. You know, when we first came to the UK, I don't know if you've lived in Africa, in sort of towards the tropics, which is where we were in Zimbabwe. The day basically is there's 12 hours of day and there's 12 hours of night. And that's pretty normal all year. As a matter of fact, you know, in winter it sort of heads up a little bit. It sometimes sets a little bit after six. In winter it sets a little bit before six. In summer it sets a little bit after six. But basically you work on six to six as your day and night. And those from Zimbabwe will sort of know how that sort of works. So when you come here, so we came here in summer. Anyway, and the first night, I was there thinking that it was like 5 o'clock in the evening, and I couldn't understand why I could not keep my eyes open. And of course, as you know, it's probably, I think it was like about 9 o'clock in the evening or something. It was really ridiculous. And we had to get used to these long days. And so my son-in-law came up and said, Yona, this is wonderful. But in this place, he actually comes back from work and he's able to go out and go rock climbing. He's a rock climber. And he's able to go rock climbing in the daylight in summer. So I thought this was great. This is the most wonderful thing out. Then after a few months, we came to November, December, and things started going the other way around. And it started getting dark. As a matter of fact, you know, you're getting up in the dark, and you read in the Bible where it says, you know, he got up a great while before day. It's so easy to do in the UK. I think all of us get up a great while before day. And then I also found I had to drive around. So I would drive Jeanette to work in the day. It was great. But at nighttime, it suddenly looks different. I don't know if you've ever noticed that. When you drive around at night, you think you know where you are, and then suddenly at nighttime, you no longer really know where you are. At least here, you've got streetlights. In Zimbabwe, we don't have streetlights, so at nighttime, it gets even worse. And we've got these things called potholes. In the UK, you think you have potholes. But you actually do not have potholes in the UK. It's I was looking at the roads that they're complaining about, and here you can even drive through those potholes. You cannot drive through the potholes in Zimbabwe. You can fish in them. So you've got to get used to this light and darkness. And it's interesting how light has such an effect on all that you're doing and how it can change how you see things. So today I want to look at, if you want to just turn to the key scripture first, John 8, verse 12. And here Jesus says, I am the light. He says in verse 12, he says, again, Jesus spoke to them saying, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. Amen. Beautiful scripture. Okay, Jeanette says I need to hold the mic. So let me, this is why God gave us wives. Okay, now we're going to have to. All right, okay, we're back to normal again. So he says, I am the light of the world. Now it's interesting. So now I thought I would actually show you how to do a Bible study as well as doing this thing that we're doing here. Because you know that if you look up in, especially if you've got a computer, you can actually look up all the places in the Bible where the word light is used. Do you want to know that there are a lot of them? The Bible is full of light, which is a great thing. But I wanted to look up all the places where the words light and world were used. And it's interesting, if you come to the Gospel of John, it's used six times. And it's then used once in another gospel, and that's the Gospel of Matthew. So what I would like to do today is to take you, instead of, there's so many ways we could look at this verse, I want to take you through those six mentions of light and world in John, and the one mention in Matthew, because to me it's such a beautiful picture of Jesus and us being the light. So we're going to come back to the scripture we're looking at now, and have a look at it later. But to start with, I thought we would go back to the one in John chapter 1, verses 1 to 10. Because it's interesting, after this verse, by the way, that's up there, the John 8, 12, he mentions light. He does not mention it again until the next chapter. So he brings it up, and then he doesn't, all he talks about after that is how he is God. As a matter of fact, he ends the whole passage by saying, before Abraham was, I am, where he declares himself to be God. But let's go and have a look, because he actually shows us even more in where light first comes in John. So if you want to go to John chapter 1, and we're going to read the first 10 verses. I'm going to read through them, and then we'll come back to them. So John 1, verse 1, it says, in the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him. Without him was not anything that was made. anything that made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which gives light to men, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him. Yet the world did not know him. Isn't that a beautiful passage? And it's one of those passages which we know shows Jesus as being God. But of course, I hope you picked up that that passage, when John wrote that passage, he was linking it to another Bible passage. And I don't know if any of you know where that other Bible passage comes from, but it's the very beginning of your Bible, Genesis chapter 1. So he starts off there, in the beginning was the Word. The other place in the Bible where in the beginning is mentioned is in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And so in the beginning, we have God. And it's interesting that when it talks in Genesis about the beginning, it's talking about a period in time where God created everything. So he actually comes, so it was the beginning of everything for us, for the world, when he created that. When John talks about the beginning, he's not actually talking about a beginning. He's talking about eternity. In the beginning was the Word. He's not saying that there was a period in time when there was no Word. He's actually saying right from the beginning, as far back as anything you can think of with time, the Word was there. He was in the beginning. He is God with God, and he is God from the beginning. And I'm not going to go into any of the discussions that you can have. If any of you have ever sat down with a Jehovah's Witness, these verses, you will spend hours discussing them. But it clearly actually is talking about the fact that it's linking Christ to the God in the book of Genesis. And it's interesting. What does it say then in Genesis? Those of you, I mean, this is one part of the Bible most of us can quote. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth was without form and void. And then it says, and God said, let there be light. The very first thing on day one. Now, it's interesting. Here, John is talking about Jesus as the Word, the Logos. The Greek word is Logos. But he's talking about him as the Word, which is the spoken word that is actually that God actually says. And the very first time we hear of the spoken word in Genesis, it says, and God said. So he's linking definitely that Jesus and what God said is the same thing. And what's the first thing that God said? Let there be light. And here we discover that the light that really exists, the real light, isn't the sun. It's actually Jesus. Jesus is the light, and he is from the beginning. So what we have here is a picture. Now, there's a whole lot of sermons you could do on this, by the way, which I don't have time for doing. So you'll be pleased to hear. So, but it's what it does establish is that Jesus is the creator. He is the one that brings everything into creation. And as a matter of fact, when we see the sun, which we'll see later, the sun is merely a representation of what Jesus is to this world. And we can learn a lot of lessons from that, which we will look at as we go through these passages. So that's the first time that we see light mentioned. But the next time is actually in chapter 3. And now this is a famous passage because at this point, Jesus has now started his ministry and he's talking to a guy called Nicodemus, who's actually a Pharisee. And he's telling Nicodemus, or Nicodemus has come to ask him a question. And Nicodemus asks one simple question and we end up with this beautiful passage that flows from it. Nicodemus basically says, you know, we have heard that you are a man who has come from God. And before he even gets the question in, Jesus turns that all around and says that, you know, you need to be born again. And we all know that beautiful passage about being born again. And then he ends off by talking about the fact that that the famous verse, John 3:16, you know, that for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. Here we have, if you go past John 3:16, so he's now talking to Nicodemus. This is now what part of the discussion that Jesus comes up with. In verse 19, and this is the judgment, that light has come into the world, and people loved the darkness rather than the light, because their works were evil. For everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his works should be exposed. But whoever does what is true comes to the light, that it may be clearly seen that his works have been carried out in God. It's interesting. If you want to hide something, where do you do it? You do it in the dark. Let me tell you, we have a policeman among us. If I was to ask when do most crimes actually take place, it's interesting that they often will take place at night. But why? Because it's dark. People can do things without being seen. They think they can actually get away with it. If they do it during the day, they also want to do it without being seen. So they'd have to go to extra lengths to do it. But people like to do things in the dark because it covers, or they think it covers, what they're actually doing. And it's interesting that in this world, I don't know if you've ever played those games with little children, you know, this peekaboo, where you cover your eyes and peekaboo, and you sort of looking at the child, and the child gets all excited, and then you cover your eye, their eyes again, and they think you've gone. You know, it's a but meanwhile you are really there, but it's their perception is that they're aware, and then later on when the child is doing something wrong, what do? They close their eyes, you know, because now you can't see what they're doing. You know, but really you can, and that's what it is with God. With unfortunately, we love darkness because we think it is covering what we're doing, but in actual fact, the darkness is really covering, is not a covering at all to God. He is light. He can actually see all that is happening. Some years ago, we have a place in Zimbabwe we call Kariba, which is a lovely wild place. And there's an island there called Fothergill Island, which you can go to. And there are buffalo and all that on this island. And there's a lovely little place where you can, a pub that you can go and have a meal and that. And then we went there on a houseboat, parked the houseboat, and we'd gone to this pub. And there we were actually having it some time. I was a teenager at the time. I had two of my teenage friends with me, and we were listening intently to the guy telling the story behind the counter, and he was telling us about this mad buffalo that lived on this island. And this mad buffalo at one stage, it actually come into their camp, apparently, and I don't know how true the story is, but it's what he was telling us, and as teenagers, we believed everything he said. So he was saying this buffalo came in and managed to make everyone climb trees and stay in the trees and wouldn't let them down. He actually stayed underneath the trees to keep them there. And apparently this buffalo would actually, if you were going along, he would actually go around back to come behind you. So we were now terrified of this buffalo that we've never met. And my dad and them, meanwhile, they were busy drinking quietly on their own over there, ignoring the whole story. We're now heading back in the dark to our boat. And we've got to walk along the road, and we get to a point where we've got to now cut off the road and go through the bush down to the boat. So us three brave young teenagers are at the front, and we have a torch. You know, a torch gives you light. So we're shining this torch in front of us, and we decide we've gone far enough along the road. We're now going to head across. My dad and his friend realized that they didn't want to have anything to do with us, so they were walking further back and letting us go on ahead. Anyway, so we're now marching through the bush towards where we think the boat is. And as we're marching, I'm going along like this, and suddenly the bush starts to explode all around me. I hear, whoo, 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 and there's a lot of noise. And I spin my torch around like this, and where my wife is here is a buffalo standing. So anyway, I looked at this and thought, well, I don't like that. So I switched off the torch. Now, I hate to tell you, but switching off the torch did not make the buffalo go away. And at that point, we actually went into a blind panic. And all of us three brave youngsters, someone apparently shouted, run. All three of us deny that it was us. But it was one of us. One of us yelled, run. So the one guy thought, I'm running for the boat. So he ran that way. The other guy thought, I'm running for a tree. So he ran that way. I thought, Dad'll know what to do. So I ran back towards where my dad was. Fortunately, my dad went, stop! And we all came to a halt. And he managed to get us back together, and we actually walked through this herd of buffalo back to the boat, which, talking to people afterwards, we were very fortunate. The buffalo must have thought these guys are crazy and didn't do anything. But we thought the darkness, I thought by switching it off, I wouldn't be able to see the problem. And that the problem is that it's still there. People who are doing things in the dark, you're sitting in the dark, they think that what they're doing is not seen or is not known by anyone, and yet it is still there. It is still something that is, and yet it is not hidden to God. God can actually see it all. It is actually as clear as day for him. So let's go on to the next verse. I'm going to race through some of the other verses because I'm going to get to the final one, which is which I want to focus on. But if you want to do a study on it, you can note the verses and then look at it in your own time. So the next one is in chapter 8. John chapter 8, so number 3, it's John chapter 8, verse 12. And it says, and again, Jesus spoke to them saying, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Now, it's interesting. This has happened straight after an account where Jesus has there's a prostitute that comes in, and she's been caught. Well, we don't know she's a prostitute, but she was caught having an affair with a married man. And obviously they caught both of them, but for some reason the man, you know, in a typical sort of thing, the man is let go and the woman is brought forward and they say, no, this woman is guilty. We're going to stone her to death. And they bring her to Jesus and say, the law says she must be stoned. And we all know the story where Jesus writes in the sand and then says, let him who is without sin throw the first stone. No one does. And so he then says to her, you know, he says, where are your accusers? And she says, there are none. And so he says, well, I don't accuse you either. Go and sin no more. Now, what's interesting, she is now free of everything. And then straight after that, Jesus then says this, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And I spoke before about the fact that darkness is what we hide behind. But you want to know that if you bring it into the light, you can actually deal with it. Now, the problem is a lot of us don't want to. I had a boss at work, and he's unfortunately died now, so I can actually talk a bit more freely about what happened. But he was actually an alcoholic. And it was one of my first jobs. I just got married with Jeanette. I just got married, and I was one of the accountants in the company. And I knew there was something wrong with him, but I couldn't put my finger actually on it. And when I asked him, he actually says, no, it's his medication. But it turned out, of course, he was an alcoholic, and it was an issue. And eventually, his family couldn't deal with it, so they came to us at work, because we started to get to know him and his family and all that quite well. And so they sat us down in a room and opened up to us to saying, look, he's an alcoholic, but he won't admit it, and he won't actually deal with it. What we need to do intervention. They're going to do an intervention and come in and actually publicly show him. And I was a youngster. I'd never been in anything like that. So it was quite an experience. And I still believed that maybe it was a medical problem and it was just what they were saying. Unfortunately, what they did, they got him in, and then they went round his office, and they opened drawers, and then we found a bottle of whiskey behind the drawers. They opened this cupboard, and there's a bottle of whiskey hidden at the back. And we just saw the humiliation that this guy went through as we were doing all this. Because when he was doing it in secret, when it's now revealed, it's now horrific. It's now something terrible. But what he then realized was that all of us wanted him to get well. None of us were there to condemn him. We actually wanted him to carry on being the boss. We wanted him to be well. And so there was a group called, at that point, it was called Alcoholics Victorious, which was a Christian organization for alcoholics to go to, and a rehab center where they could get dried out. And he actually went and became part of that. And after that, what I realized was the alcohol, even though it still was an issue he had to deal with, it had lost its power. Because he now knew that we knew, and he could talk about it. So when he was struggling, he could actually bring that up and say, I'm struggling. Whereas before, he couldn't do that. And you know, that's what happens with sin. Satan will use sin to condemn you. Jesus said that if we follow him, we will walk in the light. Because once you're in the light, you can deal with issues. You know, you can actually see how to deal with it. And once you know it's in the light, and once you know that God is not the one going to condemn, he's actually the one wanting to convict and change, he can actually deal with that. So let's, as I seem to be spending a bit more time on this than I expected, let's move on to number 4. And that's in chapter 9. So had I done 8, verse 12? Yes. Yeah, so it's chapter 9. This is now the next chapter on, verses 1 to 7. And it says, as he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And the disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, it was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. Having said these things, he spit on the ground, made mud with the saliva, anointed the man's eyes with the mud, and said to him, go and wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. I want you to notice something there. This man was blind, and now what could have happened was he could have been condemned for whatever. And unfortunately, I have seen Christians do that. Where we see someone sick, what's the first thing we want to know is? We want to know what the sin is that guy's done. The reason he's sick is because there is sin. Do you notice that Jesus doesn't even go there? And I think as Christians, it's not a place we need to go. Jesus has come to actually heal. He's come to set us free. He has not come to condemn. Amen. Who is it that's come to condemn? It's actually Satan, the enemy. He is the one that brings the condemnation. So if you're bringing condemnation, you're not working for Jesus. Jesus has come to convict and to release and to heal. And here we see that he takes this blind man, and the man comes in blind and then leaves seeing. And we need to know that if we come to Jesus with whatever problem we've got, and I don't know what it is, it was mentioned before, that maybe some of us are carrying burdens, and I feel that as well, that maybe some of us are. Even as Christians, we can carry these burdens and hide them. But you want to know, if you bring them to Jesus, you can leave seeing. And it's not a case of having to go through and say, well, that works for others, but you haven't seen my sin. You haven't seen, you know, I'm one of those that I sinned 20 times, and this is now my 21st, and I think 20 is the limit. There isn't a limit. If you bring it to God, he can heal. But unfortunately, you have to bring it out of the darkness and into the light. Okay, let's go on to the next one, chapter 11, verse 7 to 10. It says, then after this, he said to his disciples, let us go to Judea again. And the disciples said to him, Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you. And are you going there again? Now, the reason he's doing this, by the way, is because he's been told Lazarus has died. And he wants to go there to actually pray and heal Lazarus. And Jesus answered, verse 9, are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of the world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him. Satan has come to condemn. That is his role that he's wanting to do. God knows that we need to be walking in the light. And I'll actually come back to this later on, so I'm not going to go further into it. But to know that actually that Jesus will show us what we should be doing. Jesus is going to show us what we should be doing. He actually, not only is he the light to sort out your problem right now, but he's going to show you the way. Do you know that if you want to travel, it's easier to do it in the light than in the dark? And if you come into the light, you'll be able to see where you're going. Now, what I do know, there was a book that came out years ago called Just Enough Light for the Step That You're On. And now a lot of us, and I've had people come to me and say, I want to know what I'm going to do with my life. Especially teenagers, by the way. They want to know what they want to do with their life. Well, look, I'm now in my 50s. I still want to know what I want to do with my life. So don't be in a rush to try and get there. But God will show you enough for the step that you're on. He doesn't necessarily show you the next step. And sometimes you have to take that step in faith into the dark, but knowing that he's shown you enough for the step that you're on that you're stepping off of. But you've got to do it in the light. And once that light is there, God will show you. But he'll only show you enough of what you need to know. I think if he showed you where you were going, you would never go there. Jeanette, years ago, when we first got married, said the one place she would never, ever, ever go is the UK. So if God had actually shown her at that point, saying, here's your plan, and when you get to this point, you're going to be in the UK. She says she wouldn't have married me. So God doesn't show us the whole plan, because I think if he did, it would be a disaster. But he shows you enough for what you need to do now. What we've got to do, though, is trust him in faith for what we can't see. So let's go on then to chapter 12, verse 44 to 46. And it says here, this is the last time it's mentioned in John, with the light and world. It says in verse 44, and Jesus cried out and said, whoever believes in me, believes not in me, but in him who sent me. Whoever sees me, sees him who has sent me. I have come into the world as light, so that whoever believes in me may not remain in darkness. And he then goes on. After that, he meets with the disciples on the Last Supper, and he washes their feet. And then he brings that whole teaching about the fact that he is going to prepare a place for us. Because you want to know that he is the light of this world, but he is even more the light of the next world. If you go through Revelation, it says there that they don't need a sun. Now, I don't know physically if that actually means physically they don't need a sun, but what it does mean is that he is the light of that world. In this world, we need a physical sun to actually give us light, but in that world, Jesus is the one who will give us light. And we need to know that he is the light of this world. We need to trust in him, not only for now, but we're trusting in him for eternity. You know, so we, and that actually helps us with what I want to go on to for the last point. And for this, we're going to leave the book of John, and we're going to go to the book of Matthew. So if you want to turn to Matthew 5, verses 14 to 16, I'm going to read that, and then I want to show you a picture. So Matthew 5, verses 14 to 16, it says, you are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. So here we actually have a picture of not just Jesus being the light, but of us being called the light. And it's interesting, if you go through the Old Testament, there's a whole lot of, I was initially going to take you through a whole lot of things showing light. And you know that you've got the light of creation. Then later on, you have a burning bush that Moses then goes and sees. And then you have something which the Jews refer to as the Shekinah glory of God. And this is the glory of God. It's a bright light that actually came and filled the temple. So it first of all filled the tabernacle where Moses was. And if you remember, Moses met God in the mountain. And when he came down, his face was shining, that he had to put a bag over it so that he wouldn't scare everyone. But then the glory of God fell on the temple, and no one could go in the temple whilst the glory of God was there. Oh, sorry, on the tabernacle. Then Solomon built a temple, and the glory of God came on again. And then if you remember, they rebuilt the temple and they waited and nothing happened. The glory of God did not fall on the rebuilt temple. And he said, but this temple will be greater than the others, because he was actually referring not to that temple, but to the temple of Jesus. And Jesus, of course, when he came, he was filled with the glory from the beginning. He was, and as a matter of fact, we then saw that glory on him, the Shekinah glory, when he went up into the mountain and he gets transfigured. And he starts shining like an angel, and you see Elijah and Moses come and stand with him. So we see that glory there. And then, of course, he goes on to say that he's sending the Holy Spirit, and we are now the temple of God, and that glory now dwells in us. So that glory, that shining, that greatness of God, that light of God, the thing that actually can convict people of sin, can bring people into healing, and all of that, you know that is in you. That is in us. And what do we do with that? Now, it's interesting. I've got a picture. So I want to, if you want to put up the picture. That is a picture of the sun, the earth, and that is the moon going around it. Now, you'll notice that the moon, it's all the different phases of the moon. So you know that the moon, sometimes it's a new moon and you don't see anything. And then at other times it sort of waxes and wanes, where it becomes a sliver, goes to half, and then eventually ends up as a full moon, which then shines brightly. So the moon that we can't see is the one which you can see is directly between the sun and the earth. So that is a new moon, because, and the moon, do you know the moon has a face that looks at the earth? So now I want you to picture, when God made the sun is a representation. In Malachi, it talks about the sun of righteousness rising with healing in his wings. And that sun of righteousness is a picture of Christ, because he is the sun, but he's also the sun, you know, in his brightness. The moon, I want to now do as a picture of us as the church. And you know that we wax and wane. Sometimes we shine brightly on this earth. We set an example. We give light to people. Never as bright as the sun, but sometimes it can look as bright. At other times, you know what? People look at us as Christians and they don't see much at all. As a matter of fact, we don't give off any light. As a matter of fact, sometimes we even seem to be missing. They look at us and say, and you call yourself Christian? Isn't that right? We sort of wax and wane. But notice when he's bright, the full moon is on the other side of the earth. And what is the moon? Why is the moon bright? It's because the moon is looking directly at the sun. The moon is looking directly at the sun, and the earth, if you want, is in between. But he's no longer seeing the earth. He's actually seeing the sun, and his light is now shining on the earth. So again, this is my own interpretation, by the way. So if you want to take this as biblical, this is not biblical. But this is just a picture I have of how we need to be as Christians. If we want to shine as bright, and I think it's one of the reasons why God has put the stars and the moon and that in the sky, is to teach us lessons. And if we want to shine brightly, we only do it by reflecting the sun. You know, the moon has none of its own light. The moon does not have a light. You know, if the sun's not shining on the moon, we don't see it. It's only when it reflects the light of the sun that we actually get to see it full. So how are you reflecting into the world right now? And it says here that we need to be a city not hidden under a bush. And a city hidden under a bush, to me, is like the moon when it becomes a new moon. It's now, if you have a look, that moon now has its back to the sun. All that moon can see is the earth. The earth cannot see the moon at all, but the moon is seeing the earth, but it's seeing the earth very different. It's seeing the earth in shadow. It's seeing the earth in darkness. On the other side, when the moon is looking directly at the sun, it sees the earth full, and it can see the earth clearly. If you want to see problems in the world clearly, you need to be looking at Jesus. As you look at the world, you will actually find that it starts to look dark. And I actually wanted to bring up here, there's something happening right now. I don't know if those of you watching the news, by the way, don't you long for the days when you turned on the news and it was all about Brexit? Now we turn on the news and it's all about this virus, this tiny little virus that is actually causing so much mayhem around the world. It's stopping sports events. And can't you look at this virus and it suddenly becomes a big problem. Suddenly, and what you find yourself doing, we went out to the supermarket, and there's no toilet papers. You know, I mean, I don't know what toilet papers have got to do with the virus, but anyway, there's no toilet paper, there's no pasta. And so when you see it, and if you see one packet there, and Sue also sees the one packet there, and we're now both running for that one packet. Who's going to win? but shall I tell you, the problem is... The problem is that we get to a point where we start seeing, if you start focusing on the problems in the world, it will all be about, I need that packet of pasta. If you keep your eyes on Jesus and you realize that he's in control of everything, do you know you need not fear the virus? Because this virus is not stronger than Jesus. As a matter of fact, this virus is actually, he has the whole thing in control. He knows exactly, someone was mentioning about the fact that he knows the day of our birth and the day of our death. You know, God has that in control. It's not the virus that's got that in control. It's not the virus that's going to kill you. Unless God has actually ordained that is actually the time when he can actually, for you to leave. But it's in God's control. It's not in your control. Now, it doesn't mean you be silly. It means that you've got to use wisdom. But it does mean you can start doing things. It means that when Sue and I are both fighting for this, and then we see this non-Christian BB over here coming along, and she's actually in need of it, we can both step back and let her take it. Not because of any other reason, but because of the fact that we actually realize that it's more important. There are more important things. And I think the sad thing is right now is that it's almost getting to a point where Christians are going to start withdrawing and not being part of the world. That has never been the call of God. God actually wants us to shine in the world. And do you want to know what a beautiful opportunity to do it? We've been given a gift in this virus, a gift for us to be able to shine for our neighbors, a gift for us to be able to, you know, be one of those. You know, there's thank yous going out for the doctors and for the carers. How about actually being one of those? If you know that your neighbor is one of those that is isolating or self-isolating, helping them get their groceries and actually not trying to impose yourself on them, you know, doing all that thing where you've got to actually leave it on the doorstep or whatever it is, how they're doing it now. But actually, we've got an opportunity as Christians to show our Christianity in all of this. But we can only do that if we realize that Jesus is the light of the world. And we don't do it to show anything about ourselves, by the way. If you're doing this to show you how good you are, you've actually missed the whole point. You've got to reflect Jesus in this. And it doesn't mean that you needn't be afraid, but it means what they said about faith, feeling afraid, I trust him. And that's what it's all about. We need that real faith, that even though we're afraid, he's bigger than this. I'm going to trust him, and I'm going to step out and do this, trusting him. And if you are afraid on this, we have a doctor here that actually can update you on how serious or not serious it is. Because let me tell you, the media has hyped this up, and the same they did with Brexit, they're now using the virus. So don't get caught up in all that hype. Be sensible, be wise, but at the same time, let's not lose out on the fact that we need to shine as a light for others. This is an opportunity for us to do things for others. So that's basically all I'm going to cover. If you want to go look at those scriptures, it's actually, you can go through each of those. And it's a wonderful study to do. I've only touched on a little bit of Jesus being the light of the world and how we can be a reflection of that light. But Jesus is the light of the world. He is the real light. He is the one that if you've got anything in darkness, if you're a Christian and you're still doing things in the dark, you know you can bring it to the light. He can then deal with it. And and he is the standard that we can actually judge ourselves by. You know, in the darkness, you can't see the standard of what you should be doing. But in Jesus, we know the standard. What we need to realize, though, as well, is when we look at the world is still in darkness. So if any of you have ever seen those films where they put on night goggles, so the guy with the night goggles can see clearly. But everyone he's looking at, he's got to realize they're actually walking in darkness. And the problem is a lot of us Christians, we judge the world by what we can see. Why are they doing that? That's obviously sin. You know, how can they do that? But of course, we've got to realize the world is in darkness. And when we realize they're in darkness, then we're going to pray even more. We're going to love the sinner and hate the sin. We're going to actually love them and actually see the hurt that is happening, but want to see them free of that. But we won't be judging them because they're doing things which they're doing in darkness. The way God puts it in Jonah is they don't know their right hand from their left. But we need to have that light of Jesus in us to see them like that. And then we can actually help them. So as Christians, let's look at our own lives. If there are parts of your life that is in darkness, and there are, all of us, by the way, have parts of our lives in darkness. All of us have something in our life that we're actually saying secretly to God, this is going to the grave with me. You know, just to let you know, one day it will be revealed. Isn't that a scary thought? But it's also a great thought because it means that the truth will also come out. And God will actually know your heart behind it. It's not just the action. He'll know your heart that's involved. And he can actually do that. But he can deal with it if you bring it into the light. So if you've got things that you need to pray for, please find a Christian person that can pray with you. If they condemn you, it's not from Christ. What we all need to do is to know that we're there to help people get free of sin. We don't congratulate them in their sin, by the way, because no one brings it to you to talk about because they want to stay there. They need to be set free. And we can actually pray and be used in that. And this is an opportunity, by the way, for home groups, for connecting with people and building those relationships. So let's resolve to walk in the light. Jesus is the light of the world. Let's resolve to walk in the light and to actually allow him to be the light that's going to guide and direct us. Let's also resolve, if you're someone who is actually, you're listening to all this and it's like you're seeing other people doing things differently, but you don't feel you have that light of Christ in you, that it's not something that you're walking in at the moment. Do you know this is an opportunity for you to also to be able to pray and come forward and say, I want Jesus as the light of the world to be the light of my life. To be the one that I can actually start reflecting him. And this is an opportunity for you to pray. Now, if you want, you can come forward and we'll pray with you here. You know, you don't have to find Russ and myself to pray with you. You can actually find a Christian to pray with you. It is something that God has actually given us because it's not about us. The only person it's about is Jesus. And so do that. Don't actually sort of sit on that. Don't, you know, if you're seeing something that you can do, you can walk free. Take the opportunity to do that. So let me maybe just close in prayer now, and let's commit ourselves to God and to thank him for being the light.